If you ask the law enforcement officers out there, they say lock them all up. You know, fill it till you can't shut the door, because that's a short-term solution to their problem. Because while those people are inside that facility, they're not committing crimes.
You can't have a discussion about criminal justice reform without talking about law enforcement. And on this episode, we are doing just that. Welcome back to the Rethinking Jails and Justice podcast, produced by WGTE Public Media and made possible by support from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation as part of the Safety and Justice Challenge, which seeks to reduce over-incarceration by changing the way America thinks about and uses jails. In this episode, we explore how local law enforcement contributes to criminal justice reform, the pushback from some officers, tension between community and cops, and then we'll take a broader look at policing challenges nationwide. While law enforcement officers are sometimes critical of criminal justice reform, many community leaders say it started here when Lucas County's top law enforcement officer, Sheriff John Tharp, called a press conference in 2013. He stepped out in front of reporters and the community, and he said this.
We need a new jail. Numerous responsibilities the sheriff has, but one of the responsibilities is to maintain the jail, but make sure that inmates are being treated humane and safe, and that I didn't feel that we could do 100%. People started listening, and in fact, I received a call from the Toledo Blade, and I thought it was kind of humorous, is that they asked me to come over and speak with the editors. And when I walked in, the first thing that they said to me, says, well, Sheriff, we know you want to build a jail. Exactly how are you going to build a jail? And I thought for a second, and I thought, I need to tell them that I have no idea. I don't have a clue of how to build a jail. But I knew the people that did have a clue of how to do it, and I needed their help. Then when I left, I asked them if they had any idea how to build a jail. None of them knew either, so it was kind of humorous conversation with them and comfortable. But I didn't feel comfortable being new as a sheriff, and I'd never been in politics before, so I was kind of a fish out of water.
But the new politicians started getting calls from leaders across the county and city. He says he was heartened by how many people wanted to help.
Everyone agreed. We need a jail. It wasn't a hard sell.
And Judge Tim Kuhlman thinks he knows why.
So I was a Toledo Municipal Court judge at that time. Our jail was consistently overcrowded. He stood up and said, what all of us have known since the jail opened in 1975, this jail is overcrowded, and it's just not fair to the people who are housed there and the people who work there. It's not safe. And when he stood up in front of the jail and said that, we finally, after five decades, decided as a community, okay, we're going to do something about it.
Current Sheriff Michael Navarre is well aware of the current jail's limitations as the new jail is being built.
The jail actually was built for 380 beds, if I'm not mistaken, and we would have 550 people in that jail. So they were elbow to elbow. They were jammed close to each other, which causes fights. It causes chaos, and it's a tough operation to run for the correction officers.
It really was. When I started in the Toledo Municipal Court, we were unbelievably busy. We were probably the busiest court in the entire state of Ohio. Per judge, case numbers per judge, we were the busiest in the state. And it was a very inefficient operation because we were so busy, we were operating crisis to crisis to crisis. That's how we did it.
In the last episode, we provided an overview of the MacArthur grant, which reduced the overall jail population and arguably ended the crisis. But how has this impacted Lucas County sheriff deputies? You may remember the community intervention training mentioned last time, which equips officers to have better interactions with people experiencing behavioral health needs. But there's training in the other direction, too, and that's taught by Sharonda Ridley.
So it's a one-time class. I do the males on Tuesdays and the females on Thursdays. And what we focus on is how we manage stressful situations when it regards to interacting with our local law enforcement, mainly.
Started in 2018, she says it's part of the Misdemeanor Diversion Program to help people bypass convictions and pay court fines and costs.
Too many people were locked up for misdemeanor charges. So the judges, they're pretty much on board. The charges I see the most are the obstruction charges. It can be anything from misuse of 911 or any domestic violence kind of charges, or someone called the police and whatever happened, they were the ones end up going to jail.
She says many of her students are people who had bad interactions with local law enforcement.
There's a lot of mistrust.
According to Gallup's Global Law and Order 2023 report, 76% of Americans say they have confidence in their local police force. Now, that's up 1% from the year before, but down from 80% in 2019.
On both ends, a lot of our residents, they don't trust law enforcement based on what they may have seen or experienced or know someone that have had to deal with local law enforcement. So them taking responsibility is what I try and work on. Whether it's something that was appropriately charged or not, how could you have handled the situation better? It's difficult, but I would say trust is the main thing. They have a distrust. But hopefully, like I said, by the time they leave, their perception of the entire thing, it's not as one-sided as it was when they first come to the class.
She says the class takes about 3 hours.
I would say midway is when they kind of come to life as far as the participation increases. I try and make it fun. I am a resident born and raised here, so I kind of share some experiences I may have. I have children. I have a male son, so they can kind of relate. So again, by the time we leave, the class is over, it's a little different perspective.
But does it work?
Maybe 5 have attended again, but not that many. Now, that's not to say that they're not catching other cases, but they're not catching those misdemeanor charges.
She says she's not tracking success rates, and neither is Correctional Treatment Facility Director Bud Height. He says they were going to track recidivism for the diversion program, but he lost funding to do that during COVID. And at the same time, because of social distancing, fewer people attended the class. But participation is now trending upward. Ridley feels the class's third and final component is likely what's keeping most people out of trouble.
And that's the end. However, that's by the time we get to that portion of it, they're interested in the information. And I think that just having those resources or knowing where those resources are at makes a big difference.
Her students learn about the help available to them through community services like free or reduced bus passes, a free bike program, and skills classes taught through the Cherry Street Mission. These can help address the underlying needs that likely landed them in trouble in the first place.
General public, they're not aware of some of those resources.
But those who do end up in jail instead of a diversion class will have a different experience when the new jail is completed in a few years. Current Lucas County Sheriff Michael Navarre says the new jail will have 11 large housing units. Population for each unit will be determined by risk, with separate units for people struggling with mental health needs. Navarre says the new design will allow his officers to have visual contact with inmates at all times. This as more services will be available to inmates in each unit.
We're going to implement some of those philosophies in the current jail.
And even though the new jail isn't finished, Navarre says he started training his deputies in new ways to interact with inmates and respond to their needs right now.
It's going to be difficult to do in the current jail because of its design, but we are going to start, and we've already began to do that. We're starting to clean up the jail. We're using our own inmates to clean walls and paint the walls. because they themselves truly believe that this is a better environment to reside in while they await trial. So it's going to take a change of culture, a change of mindset, and it's going to take extensive training.
The sheriff says he and other administrators were trained first, and the goal is to extend training to the entire department.
As we get to the day when we open the doors of the new facility, we will have changed that culture and changed that mindset.
Now, it's important to note there are just over 500 Lucas County Sheriff's Department employees, and Navarre says nearly half of them work in the jail. But with all these changes, it's no surprise many deputies from those working the streets or in the jail are reluctant to get on board.
I think what you have to do with those deputies is convince them that they've done their job. Now let the rest of the criminal justice system do their job. But again, that mentality of a law enforcement officer is lock them up and keep them there, and so I don't have to worry about them. I don't know if I can change that, and I don't know that it's important for me to change that. What's important for me is to change the mentality of the corrections officers and deputies that work in the jail, because we are transitioning from a method of supervision where we indirectly supervise to a method where there is direct supervision and there are officers stationed inside the housing units 24 hours, 7 days a week. That is going to be a tremendous challenge for me to convince that workforce that they are going to be safer, and it's going to result in a better environment for them and the inmates that they supervise. That is my greatest challenge. The deputies, in response to your question, they're going to continue to make arrests and bring people to jail. And if that person gets released prior to trial, they might shrug their shoulders and say, well, there it goes again.
And this comes as police departments across the country experience record low officer morale and dismal recruitment, something Judge Kuhlman says he keeps in mind.
Police officers have a very tough job, and their job is to keep us safe and to use their discretion every minute of their shift to do that. So the police have to decide who are we going to take to jail and who are we not going to take to jail. Well, they can't take everybody to jail who's causing trouble, because they'd spend all their time at the jail and they'd never be keeping us safe on the street, right? So all day long, the police officers are using their discretion, and we need to work collectively as a criminal justice community to make sure that the police officers trust and believe what we're going to do with the cases once they hand them over to us, so that then they have the trust and the faith to continue to do their jobs. And, you know, to be very honest about it, especially post George Floyd, but way before that even, the police are under an unbelievable amount of scrutiny.
If we're losing their confidence and their faith, we're clearly not moving in a good direction.
Adam Watkins is a criminology professor at Bowling Green State University.
Staffing across a variety of fronts remains a real challenge in maintaining basic services.
He says communities would be wise to listen to their officers' concerns.
I do recognize the frustration of the revolving door. And it is something that law enforcement often speak to. And in particular, I think there should be hypersensitivity to it now, in part because there is an open acknowledgement about some of the unique challenges of attracting people into the law enforcement profession. It is an exceptionally difficult time at the moment. And so probably more so than at any other point, we do need to be open to the perspective and what law enforcement has to say. And some of this is sort of shaped by my own work, and some of the research I was referring to. One of the things that I really have enjoyed is just being able to hear what practitioners have to say. I do genuinely feel that most objective persons, if they've had the opportunity to sort of hear the law enforcement perspective, even among persons that to a degree might have been somewhat critical of law enforcement, I think they would come to acknowledge or realize many of the challenges that they encounter, and I think would come to appreciate that there is some opportunity for change to make their job easier, to make it more feasible.
But as we all know, with government, change happens slowly.
I feel like there's no real incentive to change, right?
Beth Huebner is a professor and the director of Arizona State University's School of Criminology and Criminal Justice. She says the frustration could stem from feeling stuck.
Like, there's no competition with the police. You see, like, businesses change, like, because they have to. But the police, like, you know, they're funded, you know, by local government. You know, part of their mission is to stay stable and do the same thing, right? So there is no incentive, really. And even the same with the courts. Like, you can watch the courts, but nobody does. So, you know, and this is, again, where it's not necessarily COVID, but some of the Black Lives Matter movement comes in, and you see people change for a little bit, and then people kind of wander off and forget, and then they go back to, you know, they're just a very big, very old organization that does one thing, and so they just don't change very often.
Back in Lucas County, I'm hearing something else from law enforcement, which is similar to what our guest told us in a previous episode, and it's about communicating with the community.
I think most of the community is probably unaware of the changes that were implemented.
And Sheriff Navarre says many have the same mentality as a lot of his officers.
They know when they're locked up, they're not out committing crimes. I don't know that we can change that. I think the community pretty much affected by what they see on the nightly news, what they read in the local newspaper. And when homicide numbers are high, that's going to have a major impact on their perception of the community being safe. In terms of improving those relationships with the community, I think we have to continue to do what has been successful for us. We send representatives to block watch meetings. We talk to the community. We answer their questions.
The sheriff says they provide factual data, police academies, and even reality-based scenarios where civilians get to play a police officer when a critical decision, like firing a weapon, needs to be made.
They recognize that this is really tough.
Yeah.
That cell phone, I thought that was a gun. That's why I pulled the trigger. And that's pretty much what officers face on a daily basis. They have to make split-second decisions that are scrutinized by others over the course of weeks or months or years.
Well, certainly the idea of communication is extremely important. It is a standard knee-jerk reaction that if we're going to do something to reduce the jail population, there is going to be a tendency to say every crime committed is a result of that.
We expected pushback. We expected it from law enforcement. There were some individuals in the community, high-profile individuals, that came out quite vocal against our efforts, which surprised me. There was at least one elected official that did so also. Didn't expect that. We probably could have done a better job of educating those in law enforcement, at least at the administrative level, the chiefs, on what we were doing and why we were doing it, and giving them the evidence that why we think this is going to be successful, and in fact was successful. Probably could have done a better job that.
Now retired and spending most of his time with grandkids these days, Sheriff Tharp looks back and says overall he feels good about his dialogue with the community, often in African-American churches with the ministers.
We would not have an agenda, is that we would ask the ministers as we went around the room to talk about what they wanted to talk about and discuss. Much of those conversations was about the jail and building the facility. And we were able to get our staff people at the meetings as well to be able to answer those along with me, because I didn't have all the answers. But I had staff that could answer things that I could not answer. So we had that open dialogue with the ministers, and we felt what better way to do that is that then they can have dialogue with their congregation. And so anytime that you can break bread with the community, is you're going to build relationships. And so everything that you do is that people are not going to agree with, but if they understand why that you're doing it, then it's better understood. It's educating each other. And when I say educating each other, is that that is so important, because we in law enforcement need to know why other people think the way that they think, just not in the African-American community, but in all the communities throughout the county.
And with all the new challenges facing officers, Tharp believes old-fashioned communication with the community is the key to building trust within all communities.
We need to get out of our cars. We need to have conversations. We need to stop and talk with people when it's not necessarily law enforcement related. And so police community relations is not anything new. That's been around for years. 80 years ago, 100 years ago, when your beat cop was walking the neighborhoods and talking with people, that was police community relations. Anytime, any initiative that you can, law enforcement could build to interface with the community one-on-one, that is the key.
According to the International Association of Chiefs of Police, there are approximately 18,000 law enforcement agencies across the U.S. with more than 1 million employees, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. But despite an increase in the number of law enforcement jobs, U.S. population growth led to a decline in the ratio of residents to police officers. That means across the country, officers are serving more people. Thank you for listening. The Rethinking Jails and Justice podcast is produced by WGTE Public Media and made possible by support from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation as part of the Safety and Justice Challenge, which seeks to reduce over-incarceration by changing the way America thinks about and uses jails. I'm your host, Jason Hibbs. On the next episode of the Rethinking Jails and Justice podcast.
I think a lot of people feel like anything in the justice system is a mystery.
We demystify the math. So this sounds like a math equation to me.
There's an algorithm.
The new way risk is scored, and the upcoming changes in the way the county watches those awaiting trial.